Good afternoon. I am opening the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, the Subcommittee on Public Safety. It is February 27, 2017, and I'm opening the public hearing on Senate Bill 5532, the Oregon Military Department. And excuse me, I'm going to turn the gavel over to my co-chair, Representative Stark, because I need to go to testify on a bill, and I will return.
Okay. All right. Would you like to introduce
the topic?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Co-chair, committee members. This afternoon, we will start the first of 3 days of hearings from the Oregon Military Department. We have Major General Michael E. Stensel, who's the Adjutant General for Oregon, here to do today's presentation, along with Dustin Ball from the CFO's office.
Thank you. Well, welcome, and have at it.
All right. Thank you, Co-Chair Stark, members of the committee. Again, I'm Major General Mike Stensel, the Adjutant General for the state of Oregon. I've been in the position just over a year now, and I'm looking forward to the opportunity to give you a quick overview of our organization. I'm adept at flying an F-15, but I'm not very adept at handling computers here, so this will be a non-event as we work through this. And so somehow I just ended up at the end. All right. Let's try. Here we go again.
Page well, it was down. A great presentation.
What do you think of me so far? Yeah. All right. So we'll start out. My plan is to go over our state agency priorities, mission, organization, and the value we bring to the state, and then tomorrow, Mr. Stuckey and his team are going to go into the rest of what you see there on the outline in a little bit more detail. All right, so I thought I'd start out before launching into my portion of just a quick year in review and show you some of our folks in action. This will last about 5 minutes.
As I visit with our citizen soldiers and airmen across the state, I see the most ready, accessible, and capable Guard men and women in my 32 years of service. We continue to support our fellow Oregonians at home, our nation's warfight abroad, and our enduring partnerships across the globe. The skills and leadership developed through our complex combat and training operations enable unsurpassed capabilities and response within our state. During times of crisis, whether assisting victims, coordinating a response with emergency personnel or state and local leaders, the Oregon National Guard is the first military force to reach the scene. We are always ready, always there.
Oregon National Guard soldiers and airmen are trained to provide land and air power anywhere our nation requires when the time calls. Our military and civilian leaders require and deserve a full range of options to address the threats and instability our nation faces today, both at home and abroad. From security to training missions, the Oregon Guard continues to deploy assets around the globe. From completing annual training across the state to participating in special training like the Air Assault and Pathfinder courses, our service members have a wide range of skills to suit almost any need. The Oregon National Guard will continue to answer our nation's call by adapting to the nation's 21st century security needs.
The Oregon National Guard enhances its warfighting and homeland capabilities through the partnerships that it builds. We forge close partnerships with global, federal, regional, and state partners. In the global sphere, the Oregon National Guard State Partnership Program continues to flourish and has evolved into enduring partnerships with two nations, Vietnam and Bangladesh. This program, which pairs individual U.S. states with partner nations, continues to pay huge dividends and establish long-term security and personal relationships, while generating a significant return on investment. A true measure of the program's success is underscored by the successful transition of many of our SPP partners from security consumers to security providers, and the enhanced interoperability with our military and other stakeholders. SPP delivers wide strategic benefits. These partnerships are grounded in common interests and shared values. They develop strong bonds of cooperation, understanding, and trust that enables us to work together effectively to meet the evolving security challenges of this new century.
The Oregon National Guard service members and families are the cross-section of the population. We live and work in the communities in which we serve. Our service members and their families have support from the time they enter the military, through yellow ribbon deployments, all the way through retiree services and for our surviving family members. We provide resources, education, and events such as strong bonds, employment, family assistance, and of course, child and youth services. The main thing for our service members and families is that they feel included, supported, and that they're proud to be a military family. The Oregon National Guard reflects the communities in which we live, and we strive to support them with everything we can to make them whole military families.
In Oregon, we forge close partnerships with local, state, and federal agencies to prepare for contingencies and disasters that may strike at home. We also work with individual organizations, such as those created for the Cascadia Subduction Zone. To ensure a quick and calculated response in a variety of situations, the Oregon National Guard also teams up with local police to conduct joint training, as seen when Army aviators flew Portland police in Lakota helicopters to downtown Portland for tactical training. 2016 was a significant year for the Oregon National Guard and the Joint Domestic Operations Command. In June, we did the first field exercise focused on the Cascadia Subduction Zone earthquake that threatens the Pacific Northwest. Working with our partners in the Office of Emergency Management, FEMA, the Washington National Guard, and the U.S. Northern Command, we learned a lot to help in our ongoing preparation for this potentially catastrophic disaster. Our responsibility to our fellow Oregonians is one of our highest priorities, and when we are needed, we will be there.
Well, we continue to reinforce and find new and exciting ways that the Oregon Military Department or the Oregon National Guard adds value to our communities. Whether it's the Oregon Youth Challenge Program, which is an absolutely fantastic educational intervention program for at-risk young adults, and that we're able in the very near future to add 80 new students per class to be able to make certain that those children could become productive citizens in the future to the state of Oregon. Or the Oregon Office of Emergency Management, how they're raising the bar for preparedness and planning, ensuring that families and people are prepared for the next disaster so we can become more resilient as a state. Or the connection through our communities with our facilities or our armories, and how we're finding new and innovative ways to bring net zero initiatives and reduce our energy and water demands. Our work with the governor's office, the legislature, as well as our congressional delegation, allows us to enhance our programs and continue adding value throughout this state.
Whether abroad or here in Oregon, helping to fight fires or supporting recovery efforts, I am inspired by all that our brave men and women of the Oregon National Guard do to serve and protect. Our service members show great valor every day, both in combat and in confronting the new challenges of the 21st century. And I extend my heartfelt appreciation to our military members, veterans, and their families here in Oregon and around the world. Thank you.
Okay, you know, that video makes everything look pretty cool, pretty easy, but as you can imagine, there's a lot of work that goes on behind what we do, and so I'm going to take about the next 30 minutes to walk you through and give you a summary of exactly what we're up to here. So start out real quick talking about our vision statement. Typically, we talk about our vision statement together, but with all the similarities in the bulk of my talk about our mission, I'm just going to highlight a few pieces on our vision statement here with regard to readiness, professionalism, and our service to our communities and state. With regard to readiness, you heard throughout the video, always ready, always there. It's our responsibility to make sure that we're ready, not just for our homeland mission, but making sure that our soldiers and airmen are ready for deployments as well. Being a profession, as you can imagine, where lives are at stake, core values are of utmost importance, and we can never lose sight of the public trust that comes along with that. And finally, with regard to service to the communities, you know, we are embedded within your communities, and it's our goal to be an integral part and always recognize that we are the face of both the Army and the Air Force for all of our fellow Oregonians. I'd like to start out by noting a couple of particular examples that I think will hit home with you in terms of value to the state. And start off with the first one here on the left, Major Anil Menon. He is one of our flight docs down at Klamath Falls. He's been a member of our critical care air transport team. He's deployed three times over the years, and his role is to assist wounded soldiers that would be back in the Middle East and get them off to Landstuhl, Germany, where they can get critical care and make sure that they're taken care of. As a side note, back in 2015, he and his wife were on a trip out to India. They were going to support an ultramarathon out there, and minutes after they landed, they learned a 7.8 earthquake that hit Nepal. So they ended up changing their plans, heading off that direction. Turns out they were supporting an event where there were more than 8,000 casualties and 22,000 people injured. So he and his fiancée at the time made their way to Kathmandu. He hooked up with a non-governmental organization and started to provide relief to a number of those disaster victims. He organized early medical response while his fiancée jumped in and assisted with waste and sanitation efforts. He's also worked on multiple other humanitarian missions, including the Haitian earthquake. To the right, you see Sergeant First Class William Henderson. He was part of the 1186 Infantry Regiment. He deployed over to Kabul, Afghanistan, as part of a joint international communications team back in 2015. And if you've ever seen pictures of Kabul, it's very vertical, a lot of old rustic buildings, high density, but difficult infrastructure for getting around and setting up communications with. Mm-hmm. So he and his team was brought together to build and maintain a tactical communication system that set up for the 3,000 NATO forces that are there in the town so that they could sustain each other. And at the end of the day, I mean, just having that communications ultimately ends up saving lives when they end up calling in a team when there's some local type of attack. In recognition of what he does, the United Kingdom actually awarded him the Armed Forces Churchill Medal. And to give you an idea how big an award that is, a couple of the folks that they gave that award to were Sir Frank Whittle, a gentleman who invented the jet engine, and Sir Christopher Cockerell, the individual who invented the hovercraft. So this was no small feat on the part of this specialist and his team to see that effort through. But they're representative, I think, of what you can see as the best we can be in the Oregon National Guard. So I want to talk about my priorities for the organization real quick. I mentioned earlier the readiness of our forces was a top priority, but I didn't really go into why. I want to just highlight what a precarious time this is for the country right now. In Department of Defense, they typically talk about the four primary threats as the 4+1, that being Russia, China, North Korea, Iran, and violent extremism. All of those countries and those organizations are a very critical inflection point. You couple that with exponential increase in technology, the global warming that's going on, population growth, the reduction in DOD manpower that you're seeing out there right now, and the reduction in force structure, kind of the financial euphoria that we initially felt, we being the military, after the election. I think everybody thought there was going to be a lot of money flowing our way, but I think kind of now the fiscal realities are starting to sink in as we look to balance those restraining resources as we move forward. But that, and you've got just the change that comes with any new presidential administration. And it's a very precarious time. And I think you see that with Russia flexing its muscle right now, as well as the Chinese renewed efforts in the South China Sea and some of those atolls that they're looking to build up. But that just all goes to reinforce why readiness is such a big priority for us. The next piece you'll see there is stewardship of our resources. And when I first walked into this position, it was a very high priority for both the Department of Defense as well as Governor Brown. And at that time, we talked about it in the context of primarily physical resources. To me, our most important resources as our soldiers airmen and employees of the Oregon Military Department. So I've structured that to not just include physical resources, but our personnel as well. And that's primarily what you're looking at in those sub-bullets under item number two there. I talked about core values and the importance of that, but also empowering every soldier, airman, and civilian to be a leader, no matter their rank or their position. I think everybody's in a place to step up and act as a leader. Investing in our OMD community, which goes beyond our employees, to include the co-workers and families, and just building up a resilient culture. With how frequently we deploy now and then and how much time it takes to be a drill status guardsman, we see a lot of stress and we recognize that we need to be there for each other. The next fourth item there is just preparedness, not just for ourselves, but for our families. In the event that we were to have a Cascadia type of event, you aren't going to have time to prepare. We're looking for folks to be ready for that so that they know their families are secure and they can contribute to supporting Oregonians, as well as a potential short notice deployment overseas where you could be gone for months, if not years. And then finally, forging and maintaining partnerships across our communities, and I'll be going into that in a little bit more detail here. All right, here's a just a summary picture of our organizational structure. I'm just going to talk about the four primary colored areas there. They're all headed up by general officers or a general officer equivalent. What you see on the right there is State Affairs, which is headed up by Mr. Stuckey, who I know most of you know. Primarily deals with operations and administration, and our Office of Emergency Management falls directly underneath him. Our air component is headed up by Brigadier General Jeff Silver. Our land component headed up by Brigadier General Bill Edwards, and our joint domestic operations headed up by Brigadier General Mark Crosby, who you saw on the video. But what I want to highlight to you is that far left there, the joint domestic ops, those are the folks that day-to-day have things like our civil support teams, counter-drug, National Guard Response Force, things for our homeland mission. General Crosby would also be the general officer who, in the event that we had a large disaster and they needed to send federal troops to Oregon, they would actually fall under General Crosby's command. He's got a designation as a dual status commander. We typically have a couple of folks that have gone through specialized training so that they can have that authority, receive federal troops that would ultimately then, through him and myself, be under the command and control of the governor, so you wouldn't have federal troops freely roaming throughout the state, but be under state control. So this here is the logo, the emblem for the National Guard at large, and it refers to our mission triad and what we do. But it serves as a great graphic, I think, for describing the role of the National Guard here in the state of Oregon. What you see there in the center are three sections describing the war fight, where we're fighting America's wars, building partnerships, as well as securing the homeland. In the center there, you see our citizen soldier, and that's not there. It's there to reflect not just our heritage, but really show the emphasis not just on the airmen and soldiers, but their families, the communities, and the employers that stand behind them as well. So I'm going to go into each three of these briefly, starting off with the war fight. When I first got into the National Guard and years ago, our primary role was from being that of a strategic reserve. So in the event that you had a large call-up, they would then reach to the National Guard because the active component didn't have the capacity to respond on its own. Since that time, you've seen us evolve more to an operational reserve with the first Gulf War, where we're a critical part of augmenting the active component in the wars in the Middle East. But I will tell you now that we are more of an operational force. We are an integral part of combat operations overseas, and I'll walk you through this slide just to show you a few examples of what the Oregon Guard has done. In the last year, we've had more than 650 soldiers and airmen deployed around the world in support of the war fight. And what you'll see at the top slide there in the upper right are soldiers from the 3116 CAV that deployed over to Romania this last year in support of Operation Saber Guardian and the European Reassurance Initiative that was set up to check Russian aggression that we all heard about in the Ukraine. We had just over 240 members over there for that large-scale exercise. In the lower right is one of our F-16s from the 173rd Fighter Wing down in Klamath Falls, primarily a training mission. They deployed over to Finland, took five jets and just over 100 members, and they worked with their fellow instructor pilots in the Finnish Air Force, exchanging training techniques with them just northwest of the Russian border. In the lower left, you see one of our F-15s from our other unit, the 142nd Fighter Squadron, up at Portland Airport. They also deployed to Romania as part of the European Reassurance Initiative. They took about six jets and 240 members, and they did a lot of heavy air-to-air training with a number of our NATO allies in support of the Reassurance Initiative as well. In the upper left, those are a couple of our Chinooks from our Pendleton unit. That is a ship, just as it looks. It's not a, a tarmac there. It was actually one of the first times that the Army National Guard has done ship-to-shore operations anywhere in the world. So they were going back and forth out of Kuwait and in the Arabian Gulf there and resupply missions for naval ships. And then finally there in the center, you have one of our flight medics talking with a Canadian ground medic. They're part of Operation Mabel Resolve up in northern Canada, passing along patient information before they do a medevac of a simulated casualty there on the battlefield. So here's just a point-in-time snapshot of last month. Of all our folks that we have deployed around the world at any one point in time. Just at that day, we had 343 folks deployed around the world. It's everything from bilateral affairs officers that we have within our embassies in both Vietnam and Bangladesh. You see a number of personnel in Qatar, United Arab Emirates, Kuwait, supporting that mission there, as well as in Germany, continuing to support the European Reassurance Initiative. And I'd also point out down at Fort Hood right now, we have 63 members of our Black Hawk unit in training now to mobilize and head over to the Middle East here in just a couple months. As General Milley, the Army Chief of Staff, likes to note, you can't go to war without the National Guard. And again, this is just Oregon. We've got 50 more states out there that contribute equally.
One moment. Senator Steiner here. With
if you'd be kind enough to educate me. So the folks who are over in Vietnam by themselves, or the four folks over in Guam, I'm assuming they're attached to other units or with other... This is new stuff to me, so educate me if you'd be so kind. How does that work?
Sure. Co-Chair Winters, Co-Chair Stark, Senator Steiner Haywood. These folks that are specifically assigned to the embassy are actually part of a Pacific Command, PACOM team that's embedded within the embassy itself. Because of our state partnership relationships that I'll talk about later here, we have those members connected in there. So it creates a very symbiotic relationship as we work directly with them and build those kind of trust relationships. But they support that whole Pacific Command team within those embassies. Those folks in Guam and these other places, they actually end up being assigned and falling under the command of gaining units in those areas. You have sometimes where you'll see a full organization deploy. You know, I mentioned the group, the 63 members down at Fort Hood that are going to be deploying over to the Middle East. When they get there, there's a very strong likelihood that they'll actually even potentially be split up. Some of them assigned to one unit in one part of the country, some of them assigned to another. And there's other times you'll have a large organization. So sometimes it can be bits and pieces. You'll see that more frequently amongst the Air National Guard. You might have, as an example, a half dozen security force members going to augment a team over in Europe or Kuwait. We've got another deployment that's going to be coming up where you'll have two six-hit packages going somewhere. It won't be the whole unit, but they'll have 12 airplanes going. So it's just based on needs. If there was a large fight type of endeavor, you'd be more inclined to see a whole unit go. Does that answer your question?
Absolutely. Sure. Thank you, sir.
All right, talk about the aspect of the homeland for a few minutes here. You know, all our capabilities and experience that we gain from the war fight are a lot of the same capabilities that we apply here at home. And so what you'll see starting up there in the right upper corner is actually a picture out of one of our F-15s of a Russian bomber flying off the Oregon coast. Most people don't realize this, but about every other 4th of July, the Russians have chosen to send a couple Soviet bombers, or Russian bombers, excuse me, over to the northwest. They typically fly off down to about the northern end of California. We're the first aircraft to go out and intercept them, make sure that they don't penetrate our air defense identification zone, and then return back home. On the lower right, you see a picture of our fighter fighting capabilities. Summer before last, Governor Brown actually called up three 125-person teams in support of the ground fight. But we also, as you can see here, have aerial support with water buckets as well. In the bottom center, you see a picture of our SURF-P, which is our SBIRNE. I apologize for an acronym buried within an acronym. But it's a SBIRNE Emergency Response Force. And SBIRNE talks for types of contamination: chemical, biological, radiological, nuclear, and high explosives. But they're people that are prepared to go in a rubble pile, a collapsed building, go in there. You see they're wearing all the protective gear, get people out of that rubble and get them off to the medical care that they might need. In the lower left, you see one of our Black Hawk helicopters doing rescue operations there in Eastern Oregon. They actually end up going out on about 25 search and recovery missions a year. Upper left, you see one of our explosive ordnance, or EOD, technicians. They also are surprisingly active here in this state. They typically respond about 40, 45 times a year in support of local law enforcement for things that they have uncovered that have a special military nexus. And then in the upper middle and center are pictures from our Office of Emergency Management, the primary agency that's responsible for the coordination and response within the state for the agencies to meet local disasters. And lastly, talking about that third piece is partnerships. What you see up there in the top center is our national graduation for our National Guard Youth Challenge Program over in Bend.
That should be larger.
Mm-hmm. You know, ma'am, I will make sure that gets corrected, so that's one slide next time. But if you've ever been at any one of these graduations, you know what Kojer Winters is talking about. They're a very emotional event. You typically see a lot of tears and everything at these graduations as some of these students share their histories with you. You know, it's our program is repeatedly recognized as one of the top programs in the country, but it takes at-risk youth in danger of dropping out, puts them into a six-month program. Somewhat, you know, it provides a discipline of a military type of regiment, but many of these folks end up going back and graduating from their high schools, graduating on their own there, and many of them end up going off to college with college scholarships in hand, which is pretty incredible when you think that months before that they were at the verge of dropping out and really not on a very good path. In the upper right, you see a picture of our Starbase program. These are actually a group of fifth graders. They put through about a class a week, 60 students, and it's all STEM training, science and technology, where they get about 60 hours. And there's really what we found, there's no more high-tech environment, if you will, than of a fighter wing and those jets and everything and all the stuff that's going on there to get kids excited about science and technology.
Is it, where is that located, or where are you conducting the with the fifth graders? Are you going around the state, or is it?
Yeah, Coach Winters, Coach Stark, predominantly in the Portland metropolitan area. I don't think we've gone outside of that for right now, but it's held up there at the 142nd Fighter Wing, and I can check and see for you if that's also being done at our southern base, but I'm not sure.
Senator Winters, there's they've had a long time process, a long time program with Irvington Elementary School, which happens to be my neighborhood school. I don't know if that continues or not, but it's been quite a few elementary schools in the Portland district, as well as, I believe, Park Rose and perhaps David Douglas.
Okay. And Matt, I was just notified that it is in Klamath Falls as well.
But it's in Klamath.
I don't have the exact numbers for there. Okay. And then on the bottom four pictures there, you see pictures from our strategic partnership program, which I mentioned earlier, with Vietnam and Bangladesh. The primary focus, along with bridging cultures, is in humanitarian assistance and disaster response. We refer to that as HADR. The Vietnamese partnership, though, I will tell you, continues to grow beyond the military arena. The Vietnam-Oregon initiative is actually led by Portland State University. It's more of a whole-of-government approach where they're looking to increase opportunities in both trade and higher education as well. The Bangladeshi relationship tends to be more of a traditional military-to-military engagement. Along with disaster response, it also focuses on border security, which is a big issue over there with the growing regional terrorist threat. They also like us ask for our assistance in non-commissioned officer development and also in the enhancement of women within the Bangladeshi military. It's relatively new for them. Most of the women in their military are in very junior positions. So in working with them, anytime we get an opportunity, we take some of our senior officers or senior female NCOs to take them over there as role models so that the junior members, female members of their military, can see what they can achieve as we have as well. In the far left on the center there is actually a picture from the public-private partnership, as opposed to the strategic overseas piece, down at Klamath Falls. It's also the national model for integration with a local community. These folks actually respond about six times a month off base for medical response in the local community. That's free of charge to the city of Klamath Falls in exchange for sharing the airport and the facilities down there. This is just another way of portraying all of our involvement here over the last year. You can see on the left there, just in terms of state active duty and responses, we've had more than 5,300 individual activations, and those are primarily for things like Hurricane Katrina and Sandy. And then on the right side, you see the call-up for federal active duty, more than 21,000 activations for a lot of those overseas-type deployments that I showed you earlier. What these numbers don't show, though, that I'd like to point out is, our typical guardsmen are known for being used 2 weeks a year, 1 week in a month, for a total of about 39 days. And I think that's kind of the image that a lot of people have in their mind of how we're used. The reality is that we do much more than that, especially some of the folks as they get into leadership positions. The preparation as being an operational force that I mentioned earlier, it's easily two or three times that for some of our individuals as they train and prepare for some of these active duty overseas missions. Next, here's just a quick snapshot of where we are and how we're dispersed across the state throughout your communities. You can see starting out with the red star, some of our unit training areas. There are primary areas for weapons employment and heavy maneuvering, about 56,000 acres across the state in all that we manage for that. Then in the blue with the yellow stars, down at Kingsley Field on the southern border, Portland, and down at Camp Rylea, our primary Air Guard installations. The main flying wings are there at Portland in Klamath Falls with kind of a subunit down there at Camp Rylea. And then all the green dots reflect the locations for our Army Guard armories. You can see they're primarily north and south along the I-5 corridor and east-west along 84 there with a smattering within the central part of the state and along the coastline.
How many of your armories around the state lead problems or problems, and how many of them are very self-sufficient and are paying their way?
Chair Winters, let's see, four slides from now, I'm going to talk about lead Remediation. Okay, perfect. And we'll get right that to that. But altogether, there's about 31 armories that have had indoor firing ranges with them, and I'll give you a little more detail on that in just a couple minutes.
I have a habit of being ahead.
Yeah. Okay.
That's great. We'll sign you up. We need people like that. All right, so here's a quick snapshot of the Oregon Army National Guard. You'll see our current end strength now is about almost 5,800. We're a little low. We're only at 93% of our authorized strength, and we're working hard to get that back up. We've been in a bit of a decline here for the last couple years. That's primarily in an effort to go for quality over quantity. We recognize that we got to get it up, and we're in a large effort to do that. It's primarily comprised of two brigades, the 82nd, which is heavy cavalry, the aviation units that you've seen earlier, as well as engineering battalion. And then on the right, the 41st Brigade Combat Team, which is primarily made of infantry folks, as well as our field artillery. I share this slide with you just as a great visual of the impact of the diverse federal missions we hold and the dual kind of capabilities that it also provides for the state. You can see, with the exception of the Bradley fighting vehicles and the Abrams tanks there in the middle, just about every vehicle there has some type of capability that can be used by the state. The Stryker vehicles up there on the top are new to Oregon. They just start flowing into the state this coming month. Very similar in use to our light tactical vehicles, our Humvees, but they bring some greater speed, some command and control, and more off-road maneuverability, and would be great, a great resource for large-scale evacuation capability.
Are you preparing for the big one?
Co-Chair Winters, Co-Chair Stark, yes, we are. You know, we're always planning. We wish we had the capability to do more. We had a large exercise back in June, the Cascadia Response Exercise, through which we walked through a lot of these problems. We now have our after-action reports and everything that complete, and we're working to revise those plans going forward, working with local communities and municipalities and structuring their plans in the event that that were ever to occur. And here's, ma'am, what you're talking about. Altogether, across the state, my apologies, we've got 38 armories. We initially had 31 armories affected by this that had indoor firing ranges. 19 of those armories were converted from use pre-1990, as you see there. We had another 12 that were closed back in April of 2014. The Forest Grove and the Roseburg indoor firing ranges have been abated and converted, but we still have 10 that have been sealed up with no access to those ranges. We continue to work with the National Guard Bureau in terms of remediation of those additional facilities. I think you've seen in the media, may have seen in the media, that we got the support now from National Guard Bureau to fully fund those with federal funds. We've typically been reliant on a state match. But because of the response that the Oregonia was able to derive from the last from their investigation, the National Guard Bureau realized that we need to do this sooner rather than later. And you can see down there at the bottom requests for more than $21 million in federal funds to address those 10 armories, and then we'll be looking only for small state resource match for when we use to convert those to other purposes. I jumped past the transparency piece. One thing that they alluded to, which frankly I felt was just completely wrong, was a lack of transparency on the part of the Oregon National Guard. From the beginning, folks have been focused on this. They've been doing everything they can to provide all the information to the Oregonian in addressing this issue. And in that effort to show that we're completely transparent, we've established this website that shows the most recent test results at these armories so that people can go on, click, and actually see the test results so that they know exactly what the levels are within each of those armories. So here's a quick summary of the Oregon Air National Guard. You see their strength is just over 2,200. They're at more than 100%. The 142nd Fighter Wing, located up there in Portland, is actually recognized by Air Combat Command as the best aerospace control alert unit in the entire country. Under them, they also have the 125th Special Tactics Squadron, which is trained to deploy with ground forces and call in airstrikes and support activities from actions from the air. A small weather flight, as well as the 116th Air Control Squadron, which provides command and control air battle management in a contested type of air environment. Then there's a sister unit, the 173rd Fighter Wing, located down in Klamath Falls. They're 100% devoted to training not just active duty, but Air National Guard F-15C pilots across the country. They're the only organization that does that. They just happen to be also the third largest employer down there in Klamath Falls. They also have a small unit under them, the 270th Air Traffic Control Squadron, and they function literally just a classic air traffic control tower, radar approach control, would function at any type of community airport. Their assets are a little more refined than what you see on the Army side, predominantly the F-15C that you pictured there. Up at Portland, we've got 21 F-15s. And down at Klamath Falls, we've got 33. Also like to point out the one jet you see with the motif down there at the bottom. We got special authorization to paint that one up in commemoration of the 75th anniversary of the Oregon National Guard that we celebrated this last year. And it's gotten us a lot of great visibility around the world. And I also wanted to point out in the bottom, you know, it's easy to think that we're just airplanes. But combat airmen are an integral part of our organization as well. The individual pictured there is Sergeant Doug Matthews, who was actually noted as one of the 12 top outstanding airmen in the entire Air Force for some heroic efforts and feats that he had while deployed over in Afghanistan. Pretty incredible. But our fleet, 54 is a large amount of our actual air defense for this country. We're more than a third of the continental U.S. F-15 fleet, a fifth of all of the U.S. Air Force F-15 capability. And when you look at from our first Gulf War, where we had more than 134 fighter squadrons, we're now down to just 55, and we've got two of them here in Oregon. This is just a snapshot of our training airspace that we typically use here across the state. But I thought I'd point out is the areas in light yellow to the right of Juniper Heart and the new airspace that says Red Hawk up there at the top and a few small pieces of EO. These are areas that we're looking to expand for a number of reasons. It gives us more overland training opportunities. Sometimes in the winter, the sea states out there can be pretty bad. So in the event that you had to eject or something, we prefer to fly over land because it would just be so difficult and challenging for us to survive and for rescue aircraft to get out there. It also gives us additional training ability, especially down there in the Juniper Heart airspace. It gives us more capacity to train more students as we continue to evolve that mission. And it gives us larger airspace for our fifth-gen aircraft. The F-15 is considered fourth-gen. The F-22, F-35 that you may have heard about is considered fifth-gen. Much more higher tech, greater speeds, higher altitudes. Weapons that will go much longer ranges, so you need much larger airspace to do your training. You know, the title on this slide pretty much says it all in terms of being the only game in town. When you talk about the alert mission that's focused here in Portland, you can see the next closest facility is down there in Fresno, California. 650 miles away, and it takes about an hour for an aircraft from them to respond to some incident if it were to happen in the Portland-Seattle area. Portland also has the luxury of being able to get up there to Seattle in just over 10 minutes in the event that there's some issue that pops up there. But this is a very critical area on a number of fronts, whether you look at defense industries, like Boeing, Microsoft, Intel, like we have down here in Portland. If you look at some of the critical infrastructure, you know, we've got our hydroelectric grid here that focuses down the Columbia River, data storage down here as well, the Port of Seattle and everything that's located up there, and then just the defense facilities up around Puget Sound as well. When you look at Bremerton, Joint Base Lewis-McChord, we have a air base up at Fairchild and also up at Whidbey Island in Everett. It's a very strategically important part of the country. So this is just to bring that home a little bit further. It's a snapshot of back in 1995 when we faced what's referred to as BRAC, Base Realignment and Closure, where we were looking at facilities across the country where DOD could reduce its footprint and the cost to the American taxpayer. Portland was actually identified as a potential location that could go away. And this is one of our biggest selling points as to why that is not a good idea. You know, I outlined the infrastructure and facilities and everything that we defend outside of the population. But you can see a similar circle describing the area of responsibility up there in New England. And in that same type of square footage, you're looking at four alert sites responsible for the same amount of coverage that we provide to the Northwest. And while I'll grant you that the population density there may be higher, from a strategic standpoint of facilities and critical infrastructure, we're pretty darn important as well. And the fact that the Russians are choosing to fly their bombers down here every other year or so, I think, proves the point and makes it all the more important. Okay, here's the last slide here, and I just wanted to highlight the economic impact that we bring to the state. You can see on the top far right the $273 million in total payroll that we provide to the state. Just over $5 million of that comes from the state itself, but the rest of that is all federal payroll. And then the non-payroll number down there, another almost $67 million for a total of $340 million. And so just in summary, at a federal or a state contribution of about $18 million, we're able to recognize more than $320 million in federal support, both in payroll and construction and sustainment projects here within the state. So I think that's a great return for the Oregonians in terms of the contribution that we make and what we're being able to bring back in federal support. So that concludes my briefing. With that, I'll open it up to any questions you may have.
Questions? Yes, Representative Pulsa.
No, that's sorry, that was not.
Oh, you're just thinking.
I'm thinking.
Okay, cool.
I just have one. Yes. So when you turn on the F-15, does Bitching Betty still tell you the left engine's on fire?
Co-chairs Representative Barker, how did you know that?
I got a ride in one a few years back.
Oh, congratulations. Yeah. Yes, it does.
Thrill of a lifetime, I have to say.
And, you know, so I've got to explain that real quick. I feel obligated to explain that.
Yeah.
The terminology, yes, it's somewhat sexist. As it was relayed to me, at that point in time when this airplane was first designed, it was all pretty much a male flying fighter force. And again, as relayed to me, a study was done that voice that they used for telling you warning fire got a male's ears attention.
The Air Force found that in the 50s that a woman's voice was what people would pick that up much easier than another male.
Yes, it stands out when you
it
have
still
a, lot
is.
Commution, a lot of communication going on there. It's a one thing that stood out in all the other language that was going on.
It is, even though you know it's coming, that's an exciting thing to hear. The pilot told me, don't pull the handle.
Yeah, it gets your attention. When that voice goes off, you immediately look down at the caution panel to see what other problems you may have.
Just before we, if there's no further questions, and before we have Ms. Balk chime in, and I'll just add a little bit more context to the Youth Challenge. At one time, you know, it was before you had young people coming from all over the state, and one time it was pretty much the Valley. And the value of Youth Challenge, as it has grown, and it has, as it has demonstrated that their percentage of young people who actually sign up, go in, and their retention rate is very high compared to what we have when we compare it with the regular Portland Public Schools or even the Salem School. The other issue that is that was not mentioned, but that I know one of the students also have to have a mentor, both going in and when they are released, so that the mentor is also involved with them throughout their program, both while they're there and as well as when they return back to their community. I found it very interesting when I asked some of the students the last time I was there, these are young people who potentially are on their way of either dropping out or and what have you. Why is it, you know, that where you were having difficulty actually going to school on time, whether you were having difficulty obeying your parents, whether you were having difficulty in not getting yourself involved in other things and what have you, why is it that now you can get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, you can obey all these rigid, stringent rules and regulations that are out here like you were in base camp, and the response invariably was, they cared.
Yeah,
they cared.
Great program.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it is a great program. And you will see that one of the things some of us that have been involved with them, thought that this program should be expanded, particularly so, and I have a lot more women on the dais with me, so that we could have more young ladies that would be a part of this program. But their success rate is very, very high. So anyway, I needed to help you out a little bit on that. Since and I'm seeing the smiles in the audience because they know I'm very, very high on this particular program, have been since 99. The cadets, and if we get a chance and they come and visit with us while we're in session, and I do hope that they will be here this session. I think it does us all proud when they come for their visit. So, Mr. Ball, would you like to add anything?
Co-Chair Winters, members of the committee, for the record, Dustin Ball, the Chief Financial Office. I don't have anything to add today. I do have a presentation that is intended to go after the agency has finished up. They have another part of a day tomorrow. If the committee would like, I could give that presentation today. I'll leave it up to you folks.
Well, you always like to do it when they're finished.
Co-Chair Winters, I can wait till tomorrow.
Rep Barker.
And just one other thing, I'd like to thank the guard during that the tragedy down in Roseburg, that they were able to move the victims' bodies back from Portland in one, instead of having those families have to wait or come get them and drive them or whatever. That was very helpful, I think, for those families down there. Mm-hmm. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Co-Chair Winters, Representative Barker, we're happy to do that. Like you said, it's a very challenging time. We were able to work directly, actually, with the Chief of the National Guard Bureau. It's outside of our traditional roles, but we're fortunate to be able to step in and provide that support.
These presentations, we're live and we're being streamed, and I'm glad that the good Brett Barker brought that up, because there's also often when situation arises that the guard is that individual or entities that come in and assist communities. You kind of talked a little bit about fires, but I know that you guys are very much involved when we have fires or we have disasters in our communities. I also know that there are times when you have been very helpful to help when time and resources permit communities who have various projects that need the help of the guard to do. I need to put that on record because it's more than you just being when members are deployed to combat or whatever. There are things that happen here in our own state that you are involved with, and also those when like Katrina and others. So I wanted to put that on record for you because as the involvement of the National Guard. The other piece that I think that the public should know, and that is how much work and support that families have been given, particularly when loved ones have been sent in deployment and they are remaining here with their children and what have you. So I'm just kind of putting some stuff on the record for you.
And Co-Chair Winters, members of the community, I can't tell you how much I appreciate that. As I mentioned before, being out there in communities and really being the face for the Air Force and the Army, I think it's one of the key functions of the National Guard, being embedded within our states. And the outpouring is often overwhelming, the way folks step up, whether it's something as small as taking a child to a baseball tryout or helping a family in need. The response has really been incredible.
Any other questions, any concern? Ms. Julie, do you have anything? You mean they get to go home early? Well, if there's no further questions or testimony, we are adjourned.
Thank you.
Adjourned.